Greetings, and welcome to The Thirsty Mage, the podcast featuring a collection of the oldest modern gamers allegedly hell-bent on sabotaging classic RPGs while simultaneously enjoying traditional gameplay. I'm your host and secret Square Enix propagandist, David Lloyd, and this episode we're going to be discussing what it's like to play a CRPG on the Switch, and whether that's something you actually want to try as well. Joining me this evening is NWR Reviews Editor, and man who is unwilling to read 450 pages of text to learn the rules of previous Dungeons & Dragons editions, Mr. Jordan Rudick.
Like, before January, I gotta read, you know, 3 or 4 textbooks and pick textbooks for the next 2 semesters coming up. So, I'll do my reading for work. I'm not gonna read to play a video game, sorry. Like, as soon as manuals went away, I started wanting in-game tutorials, and the game I'm going to talk about later today does have a decent in-game tutorial, so we'll get there, yeah. But no 450-page manuals for me, sorry.
Just another kid with no dedication, George.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I should stick to Fortnite, I guess.
That's right.
No reading required, right?
Nope. And rounding out the panel, one half of the Talk Nintendo podcast, and man who hopes a certain franchise goes back to its CRPG roots, even if it's just a little, Mr. Casey Gibson.
Yeah, reading in games is overrated. That's why I just like to click and slash hundreds of demons down. Easy peasy, no reading necessary.
I'm in it for the entertainment, not the education.
I know we'll talk about it kind of in our main topic slot here, but You prefer the way Diablo's been heading, Casey? Like, you're hoping for more of that, or you're hoping it goes back to your favorite entry?
Oh, no, definitely. I hope we skew back, if anything. Yeah, I mean,
for sure.
If even for just a little, as David would coin. We'll get into all that.
We'll get there.
Yeah, I don't want to derail us on the opener here. Yes.
Well, before we get into tonight's topic, Jordan, why don't you kick off what you'll be drinking tonight?
Sure. So when the weather starts to get colder, I skew a lot more towards hot beverages. And so I'm kind of off coffee. I haven't had coffee for a long time, decaf or otherwise. But I'm trying to drink a little bit more tea. So I've got a decaffeinated Earl Grey tea with some honey in it, and probably too much honey. It I like it sweet, but as you all well know, pretty much, right? Yeah, half a cup of honey and half a cup of tea. That's me for the evening. And I imagine, you know, in subsequent episodes, I'll have different hot drinks to be talking about. I prefer going in that direction as we head towards winter here.
You know what would help that out a little bit is
little Bailey's.
Yeah, I was gonna say half a cup of cognac.
Cognac in your tea? I've never tried that.
No, that's
is that a thing?
That's the French solution for getting rid of a cold.
Okay. Well, that's the problem, right? Is that with the colder temperatures, generally the colds and the sore throats and the flus and stuff start coming too. So,
for me, as far as my drink, I do prefer a nice hot beverage too. And normally, I feel like when I podcast, I usually have a nice hot coffee with me, which I don't know how you don't drink coffee or have caffeine anymore.
I just can't. Like, I believe me, I want to. Like, I'm tired every day with the kids, and I would love to. I would love to have caffeine, but for whatever reason, it makes my chest hurt or something like that. Like, it's weird. I don't know why.
That's what feels so good about it.
I'm sacrificing my energy levels to get rid of that pain. So.
That's what the sugar's for, isn't it?
You think, right? Like, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's not my chest. Maybe it's my stomach. I don't know. You guys know I can't bloody well eat or drink anything without some kind of pain. So
speaking of jitters like that, I remember when I got Diablo 3 the night it came out.
Yes.
I drank like 2 20-ounce Red Bulls because I wanted to stay up all night. And then the servers were all down. And I was I remember just rolling on the couch like, I can't sleep. I've got work in a few hours, and I can't even play Diablo. This sucks.
I'm trying to think, like, how many hours we spent waiting for something to happen. Because, I know you've said that before, Casey. We were in the same boat. Like, I wonder, how many hours did I stay up clicking refresh, or just reloading a few more minutes,
it'll be good.
Yeah, it's going to be up any minute now, and 3 hours later, yeah, you're ready to pass out.
Classic Blizzard.
You're bouncing
launch.
Off the wall, but
you're getting to your drink.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, so normally I like to have a nice hot coffee with my podcast, but you on that dang old Western East Coast time, or West Coast time, I should say. I can't have a coffee at 11:15 as much as I might like to, so I've just got some good old-fashioned tap water in my Charleston Stingrays, or my South Carolina Stingrays cup. The AHL, I think? What's, like, the lowest NHL? I forget.
Oh, well, there's NHL, then AHL, then ECHL.
I think it might be the ECHL. It's the Capitals, like, minor league team.
Yeah, that would be the ECHL then.
Yep. Yeah, last year, actually, on opening night, they had the cup in the building. And we sold out, but yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That being said, I went to one game and I became a Greenville Swamp Rabbits fan instead because their logo is amazing.
That's a heck of a name for a team.
Oh, dude, you gotta! I'll show you the logo later. Sure. It's like a very aggressive rabbit holding a stick, but the stick is a carrot.
Oh, nice!
It's beautiful.
A buddy of mine used to play for the Albany River Rats.
That's pretty good. That's no Brooklyn Pizza Rats, which is a minor league baseball team.
Well, last week I got chastised by Jordan for not having a Quebec beer, so I'm back to the Quebec microbrewery.
The block wins all these seats thanks to you, David.
Yeah, that's all right. We'll just have to hold the country hostage until we get paid out for our services. But I went with a selection from the Brasseurs du Monde. I'm gonna have to go say that the label is what struck me on this one. There's a great big demon's head, and it reminded me of Baldur's Gate. So this one is called the Le Occult. So it's back to my 9.5%, so it's back on par. This one is another red, actually. It's okay. This one's a little bit more fruity than I'm used to. It's kind of got like a berry red wine taste to it, like a cherry sort of tart, soury taste. It's okay. Like one of my favorite beers is Rodenbach, which is it's kind of got a cherry tartness to it, but it's soaked in oak barrels, so it's kind of got that taste to it, but it's I guess at the end of the day it's like it kind of tastes like Rodenbach, but it just not as good. So it's like, oh, I wish I just had the Rodenbach.
Now you've gotten the show notes here. This beer should age well. Are you ever buying beers and just kind of keeping them, not drinking them for a while in the idea that they will age and get tastier or something? Like, or are you just gonna buy it when you want to drink it?
Well, the concept of buying alcohol and not drinking it just is foreign to me.
Mm, that's fair.
So I guess my answer would be no, not with beer.
Do many people buy beer and age it like they would with wine? Like, I guess I don't know. I'm not as familiar with that kind of concept.
Yeah, I could see some like microbrewery being like, it's better if you buy this and wait, like trying to be all fancy, But yeah, I don't know. It seems weird to me.
That doesn't seem like a good business practice.
Yeah.
Well,
then you need to buy the pre-aged one that costs double. So
that's right.
Yeah. No, the furthest I go is making sure it's the correct temperature.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. So if it
which
says
is or thereabouts.
Yeah, this one is 10 degrees, it's kind of like take it out of the fridge for maybe like 20 minutes, half hour before you drink it, sort of thing.
Okay.
Gotcha. Just so it gets a little warmer. So, yeah. Cool. So that's what I got tonight. So, and I'm going to need it because our first segment is the recent CRPGs on Switch. So,
do you
want to
go grab another
one
before we start?
Yeah.
I might as well just pour this hot tea all over myself because that's how I felt.
Oh, man.
When I was playing these games.
I was going to say that you and I had the pleasure of getting two each.
Yeah, I was going to say, seeing your guys' reaction, because I almost grabbed one of these. But, it's like I had a few other things and I was like, I'm like, I don't know if I have a lot of time to really get deep into it. And then I decided to pass. And then, I was like, whew, dodged a bullet there.
Well, Jordan, why don't you start the the bitch fest.
Yeah, yeah, no problem. So the games in question are Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2, which came in a compilation pack released, a week ago or so?
Yeah.
Maybe 2 weeks ago. And then the other one is Icewind Dale and Planescape Torment. So that's the other two pack. There's another game, Neverwinter Nights, coming in December, I believe, as well. So there, yep. The five got announced all at the same time. These are games that I don't think I was alone in being excited at their announcement that they were coming to Switch and other consoles. They are very well liked, renowned kind of role playing games. You know, they've won awards. They are on a bunch of, you know, top RPG lists, of course. You know, you've got what actually kind of happened. Like, was I was expecting that maybe. When I went to PAX West, I would run into the team that was porting them, or I would see these games in action or something at PAX, and they had no presence there. My plan was like, oh, I'm going to talk these guys up. Let's see if we can get a bunch of review codes and just blow out the coverage for these games, right? Just previews and video and reviews and all this stuff. And, you know, really excited for these games. But when I first started playing, and I started with Planescape Torment, and I don't have a lengthy history with these types of games. You know, I think I've played a little bit of Baldur's Gate. My dad was really into these games as well. So they were always kind of in the house, but I never really played a ton of them. I've always kind of maybe admired them from afar a little bit. Planescape Torment and Icewind Dale, the two games that I reviewed and that I played, there's no easy way to understand how to play them in the games, that is. And I don't think there's an easy way to understand how to play them outside of the games either. David, you mentioned when you were introducing me about a 450 pages of reading. And we're referring literally to the manuals that are written online for Icewind Dale. And you can look them up. They're on the porting studio for these games is Beamdog. Beamdog has a website set up for these games that has all the manuals and all the written documents you would need. But and I'm not saying you need to read all 450 pages, but the point remains, there's all this text, all this verbiage, all this reading you have to do just to get in, just to kind of understand the basics of these games and the worlds that they're set in. And I think that's a huge problem when I switch on a game for the first time and I'm dropped into this world, I have no idea what to do. And it's not a game where you can just figure it out. You know, it's not Breath of the Wild. It's not Mario Odyssey. It's not, I don't know, even other RPGs, like a Final Fantasy game, you can figure it out. KOTOR, which I'm going to talk about later, has a very basic tutorial, but it does the job. But Icewind Dale and Planescape Torment, they do nothing to help situate you in the worlds or help situate you with the mechanics and what's going on around you. There's obviously a very intricate story at play and interesting characters that you meet, but very, very basic gameplay mechanics. Equipping your characters, whether you need to use magical attacks on certain enemies, reviving your characters, healing yourself, equipping spells, the most basic of things that you need right out the gate, there's no one telling you how to do that. You can't even find someone in town that would instruct you on how to do that. It very much is trial and error, figure it out yourself, spend hours and hours just kind of guessing and trying new things until you get it. And for me, that's a huge problem. I mean, David, what kind of experience did you have with Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2 going in?
So I only knew them by name. Like, I've played lots of CRPGs. Not any of these four, like none of the BioWare, or I guess Knights of the Republic I played, but like these ones from the late 90s, like the series of games, never played any of them, never even really seen them. Like it's more just the reputation where I've heard of these, and I see Planescape Torment, like it's always one of the top, usually like one of the top five RPGs of all time, let alone CRPG. So I was really going in thinking like this would be fun because this is they're highly regarded. They're always talked about, and it was just now with my duo pack there, Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2. I was lucky enough that the first Baldur's Gate had a very basic tutorial, where they walked me through how to equip items, how to equip my weapons, how to fight. The spells was kind of weird, where it's like you go into the wizard, you choose the spells, like there's only so many slots, and so you have to kind of pick and choose on the fly. But then you have to rest to save the spells on your list, which seemed kind of funny to me. I guess this is like a Dungeons & Dragons kind of thing, I guess. And then it kind of ends with a very, very basic combat sequence where you go to the basement, and you like fight three bats, and you walk out, and you're just tossed into the world. But yeah, it was like it's funny how much they've aged. Like they look so old. And I mean, like that in itself isn't a bad thing, but when you're trying to put it onto the Switch, it's not made for this little handheld. So I'm kind of walking around and I'm trying to, it's hard to read because the text is not, it's not a high def. Like it's back in the day sort of text. Like the porting, they've done very little enhancements to, like, it's actually called the Enhanced Edition, I think, but
ironically
I wouldn't want to see what it was before this, because it's pretty rough. And I know on the first Baldur's Gate I actually thought it was glitching, because every time I walk, the entire screen, like the outside edge of the whole screen all the way around, I don't even know how to describe it. It was kind of like a flashing, or it's like it's bugging out all around. It was like the Switch was hemorrhaging trying to keep the video going. Like it was really weird. And it was not a fun experience.
I think the Switch was trying to put you out of your misery. I think that's what was going on there, because couldn't quite get it.
I was going to say these were originally point and click, right? On the PC, I believe.
Yeah, and they certainly need to stay that way, because that was the other thing.
Like, do you have a cursor, or do you actually just take control of, you know, the person or whatever?
So the way the UI works, if you're going into menus, there's no cursor. Like you're just pushing buttons. So like there's sub menus upon sub menus. Like when you're in kind of in the overworld and walking around, there's like two pages of sub menus. So if you want to. So there'll be actions, but then you've got to flip to other actions if there's some on the second page that you need. Like if you want to change the party formation, like how they're walking, or the form that they're in. Or if you're, like, let's say you have four characters and you're trying, like, so you always have one as the leader and everyone's kind of walking around that person. But then you can pause the game and you can take over just single people, and everyone else just kind of stands there. And so, but again, like you're hitting combinations of the ZR and R buttons, and so you're selecting someone and then you move them, and then you have to hit the plus to unpause, and then you move someone else. And then there's inside the menu, like if you want to equip this, if you want to set up the spells or equip the items, you have to go into the other menu. And then there's tons of combinations of ZR and ZLs moving around the menus inside the menus. You're going to wear out your buttons if you actually try to play this game. all you'll be doing is clicking and moving around. Now, like on the actual map, like there is sort of a cursor that's the other thing that I had a problem with, is like some of the times the cursor was disappearing. So I couldn't even see where I was clicking. Cause there's kind of like a little targeting circle where it's like, okay, I want my guy to go here. But then all of a sudden it disappears, and now I'm like, oh, well, I'm trying to pick up this thing. Where did my cursor go? Like,
that's frustrating.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of small things like that that are, they're individually they're annoying, but collectively they're maddening. And I think we had very similar feelings about that, David, when we ended up reviewing the games. And you know, I don't want to get into the nitty gritty too much here. You know, people can read our reviews on NWR. They can check out the video that we collaborated on, the Should You Play Baldur's Gate, on our YouTube channel. But you mentioned Dungeons and Dragons, and I think that's, thinking about this episode today and thinking about these games, I think that's the idea that kept coming up to me, is that if you don't play Dungeons and Dragons, or if you're not familiar with how Dungeons and Dragons works, if you're not interested in it, I don't think these games are for you in the slightest. Dungeons and Dragons is what in some maybe the fifth form or fifth iteration of its rule set, and Neil or someone else was talking about this in our Slack chat, and he was saying that these games use the second set of rules for Dungeons and Dragons, and there's been, you know, tons and tons of changes I think in the every iteration that's happened. So you're so many generations removed from the rules that are applied in these games, and maybe that understanding of these games. We were getting a lot of feedback on YouTube. I use feedback, you know, the term loosely, or maybe in a, with quotation marks around it, right? About maybe these games were really enjoyable when you were 16 or 17, and I played these games when I was that age, and I really enjoyed them. And that's fine, and I kind of understand why that is, because when you're 16 or 17, you have countless energy, mental capacity, patience maybe for games like this. But and when time. when you're in your late 20s and 30s and 40s, you don't have that time. You don't have that patience, that willingness to figure something out, to play a game, right? To understand all the underlying mechanics, to figure out what will eventually make the game fun. And maybe we're just in this place where we can't really enjoy games like that anymore. And I don't want to blame the games. I think they're just out of time, right?
Casuals.
Well, that's, yeah. I think part of it, like, you really have to consider the context too, because at the time, like, I know we were younger and we had more time to put into it, but at the same time, like, in the late 90s when these came out, they were the best. That was, like, that was the leading edge, that if you wanted to play Dungeons and Dragons or CRPGs on your PC, this was the best games in 1999. They are not the best games now. So it's if you're into CRPGs, then yeah, like there's better options available now. It's kind of like equating, it's like telling an 18-year-old or a 20-year-old now that, like, I get the whole modern gamer thing, but it would be the equivalent of me saying to someone, "Oh, I see you're playing Call of Duty. Why aren't you playing GoldenEye?"
Or any of the Mario games, right? Oh, why are you playing Super Mario Bros. On NES when you could be playing World or the new, I don't know, the new Super Mario Bros. Games are, you know.
Well, the difference there is the classic Mario still hold up.
Yeah, I mean, it holds up, but there's a difference between holding up and do you want to actually play it over something else, right? Like, I have the original Super Mario Brothers on so many different consoles. I don't really want to play it. I'm not really interested in going back and playing it. I would rather go back and play 2 or 3 or World, you know? So I get it. It does, I'm not saying it doesn't hold up, but there's whether I want to go back to it or whether there's an interest in going back to old games, I don't know that's always the case. Not every game, right?
But they also hold up to the people who have nostalgia for them. Like, if you were to again, like, someone in their 20s now and you're like, "Oh, here, I got the original Super Mario Brothers, or I've got the new Super Mario Brothers on Switch, like the newest, the one that was on Wii U," you know, I can't say, "Well, you have to play this because it's better." It's like, well, it's better because, like, I have nostalgia for it. I understand, like, I played it before, I played it at a time when I enjoyed it, and I guess I'm feeding into the whole modern gamer thing, but it's like, if there's better games out there, why, like, then don't put, like, how can I recommend you put your money towards something that I know you're not going to enjoy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I wonder if they were just, like, they knew, okay, these games are just for the people who played them back in the day, and sure, maybe some people have never played them before will jump in and find some redeeming qualities, you know, but the big target we're going for is just the people who have played these. It's going to be nostalgic. They're going to go through and relive the glory days, like you said. You know, if you grew up playing these games, you know the rule sets, or you at least, you know, as you played, you'd be like, "Oh, I remember getting stuck here when I was a kid. This is what I got to do," you know, like, and it sort of starts coming back to you. Like, I wonder if it was just simply this, that's who they were going for, you know? I mean, and now it's, I don't know. That's it.
No, like, Casey, you're right. That makes the most sense. It makes the most sense that maybe they didn't need to put in tutorials. They didn't need to make the games more accessible because the people that are going to buy them don't already find them accessible or interesting, or they're able to play them. They don't need tutorials because they know how to play it, right?
It's like they've gone through the trials and tribulations of getting stuck and figuring it out already.
Exactly. And so they've developed that affinity for these games, that nostalgia. And so those are the people that are going to buy these. But then the question after that, David, you've been asking this. Why wouldn't you just play it on PC? Who is going to buy this on Switch and play it on Switch when they could play it on a PC? Which is the ideal way to play these games.
And cheaper way, because you can go on Steam and get the game for cheaper. And if that's at regular price, you could even wait for a sale and no one's going to come.
Super cheap. I would say, I mean, sort of the go-to, like, oh, if they have a big commute, you know, you have an hour commute each way on the train, you go, well, you know, it's a long game. I can pick that up and I get to play 2 hours a day and it's going to last me 2 months, you know what I mean? However it's going to be. But yeah, I mean, obviously it sounds like it's pretty faithful to what it was, you know? And now, have these been released on console before?
No, first time.
Okay. Yep. 'Cause I was wondering if it was maybe just like, well, yeah, it was released for, you know, PS4 or something, like, yeah, we're just porting it over to the Switch and it would, you know, more or less be a relatively inexpensive endeavor. But
I think there's iPad versions and mobile versions of some of these, but this is the first time they've ever come to a console that would have a controller as the main input source. So
gotcha. Yeah. So yeah, they had to do some work for it.
Yeah, and they did a little bit, but again, it's to make it playable for someone who already knows how to play it. I've read reviews that kind of praise the way you control the game with buttons, and that's fine. Like I get that, but that's not going to help someone who's never played one of these games before.
Now, sort of just to step back a little bit from the actual, like, you know, whateverness we're talking about. Now, I know Baldur's Gate, obviously Baldur's Gate 2, like, very similar. Icewind Dale, like, they're all essentially relatively similar, just with different stories, right? You know, like, they all play more or less the same?
Yeah, Planescape's a little bit different. It's more focused on story and maybe conversations and less on combat. You don't have a party of characters. You just have one character and then a companion with you. So Planescape's the odd duck out of the other three games. Whereas Baldur's Gate, Baldur's Gate 2, Icewind Dale, you all eventually have a kind of a part, like an RPG type party in those games. You know, warriors, priests, clerics, mages, all that kind of stuff. Planescape Torment, you're one character, and you're just trying to recover all your memories. It's a very interesting concept, actually. But I really wanted to get into it because I liked the story and the characters I was encountering, the decisions I was making, but just so bloody unplayable and inaccessible. And it's frustrating, actually, because I wish that these games could appeal to new audiences, because then we'd get more of them and maybe they'd find new ways to make them accessible. But there doesn't seem to be any interest in that. And there's a Baldur's Gate 3 that's coming. But I couldn't possibly get excited for that unless they make it like Divinity Original Sin 2 or Pillars of Eternity, these games that have found ways to be more accessible. I'm not saying that they're better games necessarily. I think they're well regarded as well. But they are much more friendly to newcomers. And I think that has a lot of value in 2019, especially on the Switch.
I was going to say, do you think if you're playing this on PC, I know obviously it sounds like they're still pretty obtuse. Do you think just having it on PC, you'd be more comfortable with how it controlled and played, where you would want to put in that extra time to figure those things out? Or is the just game design itself and how it's laid out just totally not something you'd be into, regardless of the platform?
David, I'll let you answer that one first. I need to think about my opinion there. Like, if you could play Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 on PC right now, would you do that? Like, do you have any interest in doing that?
I don't personally have interest in doing that, just because I think the games may have aged too much. And there's other CRPGs, newer ones, that do the same thing, but I think would be more fun because they were built in a modern time, like they're utilizing today's technology. I guess the one example I'll give, though, is I did purchase the original Fallout on Steam. So I started playing, I have been playing that on my PC, and I can say that it is more enjoyable, though. Like, it's easier to use. The pointing and clicking makes it so much easier. Because it's just like, I can just click on the guy and say, go here, check that thing out, check that thing out. I can go through the menus quicker. Like, having a keyboard available just makes things so much easier. So it's certainly be easier to get into the game if it's on PC. Mm-hmm. Because the constant switching buttons and going through menus was just driving me nuts. And I'll talk about it later, but it's specifically too because I've played another CRPG on Switch, which had like a much better UI system with radials and that sort of thing that actually made it, I would say, tolerable. Like, it's still like these games, I still think they're called computer RPGs for a reason. I think you really need the computer.
I mean, when you're not fighting the controls as much, when the controls just feel more natural and comfortable, I think you do have more patience for a game. I think you do want to give it maybe more of a fair shake or a little bit more, a little bit more time in the oven before you make a final decision about it, because you're maybe able to figure things out more quickly or more easily. But I think at the end of the day, playing it on PC, like I'd be a little bit more interested in doing that, but I still don't have time. I still don't have time in 2019 for figuring out how to play games. Like I want them to tell me how to play them. I want the challenge to be doing the game, right? Getting from the beginning to the end. I want that to be the challenge. I don't want the challenge to be figuring out how things work, right? Mm-hmm. In a 60-plus hour RPG, that's not the fun part of it to me, right? In a platformer, in an action game, in an adventure game, sure, let me struggle with the mechanics. Let me figure out, in Breath of the Wild, let me figure out the physics of using the stasis power, the magnesis, or something like that, right? Like I'm all for understanding those things because that's part of that experience. I think that's built in. But in an RPG, tell me how to revive my bloody characters. Tell me how to equip a magic spell on my mage to fight enemies that are only susceptible to magic damage. I shouldn't be trapped in a dungeon 3 or 4 hours in that I can't beat because I can't damage anyone around me. That's just stupid, right? Like, then I have to reset to a previous point. You know, there is auto-saving, but it doesn't really help you because the auto-save, rolls you back like 30 seconds or something, right? It doesn't solve the problem. So, yeah, if they were on PC, I think I'd have more patience for it. But at the end of the day, I think, David, you said it best. They just haven't aged well, and they need a definite facelift to make them much more playable to someone who's not super familiar.
Yeah, and before anyone labels us a bunch of jerks that don't like computer RPGs, I think we should roll into what CRPGs we would recommend, because I think all of us have played them and all of us enjoy them. Mm-hmm. I don't want to gatekeep, but I still think the computer is the best place to play these. And I think we all have our favorite that we can recommend for people out there that enjoy computer RPGs, but are looking for maybe a new experience in that genre. So Casey, why don't you start us with, we're going to keep the CRPG designation slightly loose here.
I was going to say, yeah. It's
How dare you?
I don't think it's probably any surprise to anyone that's listened to me talk about RPGs. Diablo is, one of my favorite, if not my all-time favorite series. You know, it's funny because it was actually introduced to me via PlayStation. My neighbor, who was, pretty much me and my brother are like 4.5 years apart, and then my neighbors growing up were like 3 years apart, where the one neighbor, he was 1 year older than me and then 1 year younger than my brother. So you sort of paired off, right? Like, we were all friendly, but whatever, you pair off and hang out with them. But my older neighbor had a PlayStation and we didn't have one, and he had Diablo. And I just remember being just completely enamored, like, oh my God, like, this game looks incredible. And I'd just be like, Kenny, please, can I play? And he'd be like, no. He just wouldn't let me play. And my brother and him would play, because you could play two-player. I don't think it had the ability for more. Like, I know, obviously, the PS1 only had two, but I know you could get, like, the multi-tap But I don't know if it actually, but anyway, you know, they had the two, so they'd always play, and I would never get to play, and, like, it was seriously, like, the only game I ever wanted to play so bad. And then luckily in EB Games, I was like, oh my God, it's for the computer too, which is funny because it, you know, it was totally a PC game then ported to PlayStation. And God bless my mom, she bought it for me, despite I was probably like, I don't know, like 9 years old. And she's like, yeah, pick up Diablo, I don't care. And yeah, Diablo is just, it. I think, you know, Diablo 2 is the most renowned of the series, right? It's sort of where its popularity blew up. It's an incredible game. Like, the replay value is, it's just ridiculous. You know, there's more characters to play with than the original. You know, it's, oh goodness, it's just really good. But yeah, the original is, what's so cool about it is, like, it was scary to play. And, like, granted, I was younger, you know, but, like, it was way creepier. It had a more gothic feel. And, you know, you start off in this town, Tristram, and it's, you got, like, this weird, eerie music, and, like, all the people are just, like, you know, you had Wart, the peg leg, you know, you got Deckard Cain, you got all these people, and you just slowly traverse underneath the church down into the depths of hell, you know, like, it all takes place in one spot, and it's just, it's just so good. It's, you'd really, like, feel the tension going down into the depths, and as you know, continued to get lower, and you know, you run into the first real boss, the Butcher, you know what I mean, and it's like, and you were like, oh my God, you know, like, you would see him, and you would be afraid you're gonna die, or whatever, you know, and then Diablo 2, I'd say, is not nearly as dark, you know, like, it's still definitely a darker game, especially in comparison to 3, but it was a more fluid game, you know, like, it, like, I'd say it's quicker paced, you know, like, Diablo 1 is very sort of a methodical approach, and, you know, like, you go slow. Like I said, there's only 3 classes. You got the rogue, the warrior, and the wizard, or I forgot if they call it a wizard or a sorceress or whatever. I think a wizard. And but yeah, the second one sort of ramped it up, and you know what I mean, like, a much bigger area, you're going from different acts, but it still had that feel. And then Diablo 3, and I think a good point to point out is, in these earlier games, you're just a person, right? And, like, you sort of, you know, uncover things down the road, like the Nephilim, where it's like, you know, you're a human with, I believe, you know, some, like, angelic DNA or whatever, like, so you're more than a human, you know, like the humans are needed. But in Diablo 3, it's like, you're just a badass from the get-go, you know what I mean? Like, there is no tension in Diablo 3. Like, I still enjoyed the story and everything going through it, but there was never a point in time when you were worried you might die, you know what I mean? Like, you might die, but it doesn't, there's literally, like, no consequence. You know, you have to repair your armor, but you've got gold, you know, like, gold isn't ever an issue, where in, like, the previous Diablos, you get to the point where you lose experience if you die in the harder difficulties, you know, there was a true punishment, and it just, it added more tension to it. I mean, I guess now I'm just sort of railing on Diablo 3, but the games themselves, like I said, all of them are great, and I think what Blizzard does really well is translate that Diablo, like, Diablo 3 on the Switch is a great way to play the game, you know, where, mm-hmm. where you're, you know, we're talking with Baldur's Gate and those other games where you could feel like this would be play better on the PC. I think I would, like, if Diablo 4, when it gets announced, if it was going to be simultaneously be released on PC and the Switch, like, I'd play it on the PC for sure. But having played 3, like, you could play either one, and it's going to be a great experience either way, you know? And I think, you know, I haven't played Diablo 1 for PS1 in forever, you know? But I'm pretty sure it's a very great addition as well, you know, where it doesn't feel like you're hindered in any way. And I think that's, like, a really great thing that Blizzard does. But yeah, I mean, I sort of... I mean, a lot of people with BlizzCon coming up are expecting 4, that, you know, people are talking about a remake of 2. like, you know, HD version or something. Like, they should re-release Diablo 1 as well. Because I feel like it's a really great game that is often overshadowed by Diablo 2, and rightfully so. You know, I think Diablo 2 is definitely the better game. But there is still a very, very good game in Diablo. And I think people, having never played it, could go back and find fun in it, where, you know, unlike you guys, you know, going back where, you know, you didn't have such a great experience.
That's putting it lightly, Casey. I'm glad you brought up, you know, it's hilarious, actually. I was thinking today about, I wonder if Casey's going to say something about the PlayStation version of Diablo 1, because I never played that, but it was always kind of a curiosity to me that this game that I'm like, oh, this is, how could this game ever come to consoles? Like, this is definitely like a game on the PC side that would probably stay on the PC side. But it's one of those funny things that Blizzard did where they ended up putting Diablo on PS1, they put StarCraft on N64, and I guess they were experimenting as well, right? Just trying things in different places to see what stuck. And it turns out that Diablo having a life on consoles, maybe it started on the PlayStation 1, but it led to, you know, very, very good porting work and good versions on consoles. I think Diablo 3 on console is as close to the native PC experience as you're going to get. And I think it's actually a really, really good way to play those games. I hope that when Diablo 4 gets announced, that they will say it's going to come to consoles as well, maybe later than PC. Yeah. I might even play it on console instead, just because I think they've done such a good job of making that work. But I wanted to say about Diablo 1, something that really has always stuck with me is the beginning of that game, and the music and the kind of dark and ominous setting. And you, just before you go into the catacombs, there's a
the guy laying down.
The guy laying down in a pool of blood. And, you know, he talks about, oh, you know, you got to get the butcher. The butcher did this to me.
Dude, the butcher's like, mean.
And you're terrified of this guy. Like, oh, man, like, this is the setup to this dungeon. Like, before you even go in, you see someone who's come out, and this is the result of them going into the dungeon, right? They've got torn up, and they're just a, you know, half alive corpse, you know, sitting outside the entrance. But not just that, like, all the characters in town that you talk to, and there's not that many of them, but they all seem on edge. They all seem afraid of what's happening, right? That they're living outside of this this sanctuary, this church where all this stuff is happening, and it's really affecting their lives. And you get the environmental storytelling and just the world building that happens in that game for a world that is very small, actually. Mm-hmm. It's very, very effective, and it makes you feel scared, I think, to play that game anytime you do. You never feel all that powerful. It's not like Diablo 2 and 3 where you become a badass.
It's a grind.
I don't know.
It's a grind.
It's a grind, and I think that every time you go to a new floor, you're like, I could die here. I could lose all my experience, or I could not get any further. I really need to go back to town. You always have that feeling of, should I go to the next floor? Right? Am I going to be okay here? And it's something that the first game has done so well, and the second and third games really went away from. Right? They're much more action oriented, and you're not having that tense feeling anymore. Instead, you're feeling like, bring it on. You know, bring on the next boss, whoever it is. I don't care. Bring on.
I'm gonna blow them up. Yeah, we're melting.
Bring on two more difficulties. You know, I'll play on hardcore mode. I don't care. Multiplayer was obviously a huge aspect, you know, but also loot, right? Loot is what, and treasure is what drove the success of Diablo 2 and then 3, I think, right? Is you continually want to get better equipment. In the first game, I don't think it's that, I mean, you do want to get better equipment, but yeah, it's not as big a drive for that, right?
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, there, but yeah, it's more so a means to an end, you know, where it's I need this to actually get further down into that area where, yeah, Diablo 3 is like, yeah, and D2, you know, it's like, I'm going to throw on my magic find gear. I'm going to go do some Festo runs and, you know, for 3 hours and hope I get a good item.
I mean, in Diablo 3, the damage numbers get so high, they start counting them with Ks, right? Like, you're doing 5K, you know? I don't think you're ever doing 5K in Diablo 1.
Oh, yeah, maybe like 5.
Exactly.
I think, too, is something they got away with it, and like you touched on it, how that just talking to the townsfolk, you know what I mean, sort of paints the picture of this world and the story, where Diablo 3 is very much like, I'm going to run through, and there's going to be a cutscene telling you exactly the story of this, that it, I find it more enjoyable to uncover the storylines and what has happened through mm-hmm. environmental things, or through like, oh, I found a passage, you know, or you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'm praying to God for Diablo 4. I know they won't, you know, back it up as far as did Diablo 1. You know, that would be obviously that would not be what Diablo quote unquote is nowadays. But I hope they reel it back a little. Like you said, make it where you're nervous to go take on a pack of enemies. You know, you have the tools, but you still need to play smart. And give us that creepy, gothic, dark atmosphere and story to go with it, you know. And just a real quick touch, and you know, I don't want to talk too long for Diablo, because I God knows I could go on and on and on.
And David doesn't think it's a CRPG, but
yeah. Well, yeah, well, we could talk well, about I haven't World played
I'm just going on what people tell me.
You can actually play Diablo 1 in a browser. So if you Google like Diablo browser, you can play the first full game right on your Google browser right there. So there you go.
That's neat. I might have to try that out. Just I have a lot of nostalgia for that game. It's one of the first like PC games that really, you know, scared me to play it when I saw it in a store. And then when I actually got through it, I'm like, wow, yeah, I constantly feel dread when I'm playing this game. Like, it's not a bad thing, but. Not many games have made me feel that way going through beginning to end like that.
Dude, I remember the first time I fought Diablo. It was like 4 a.m. mm-hmm. at my old house, and we were playing it, and I remember I slept in the basement. Like, my brother, his room was in the basement, and I'd sleep down there, you know, because whatever, it was summer, all hanging out. And I just remember being like so like petrified, like, oh my god, I killed Diablo, but like, I'm so afraid, you know, like, I'm still afraid even though I killed him, you know. It's like, oh my god.
Yeah, that game had an effect on people, and I think that's one of the lasting legacies of it. I do hope that we'll see something like that in Diablo 4. I don't think we will, but you know, we'll find out in a couple weeks. It sounds like
fingers crossed.
Well, Jordan, your favorite CRPG, I don't think too many people would argue with it not being in the genre or not, and it's actually developed by the same people that first developed the games we just shit on.
Yes, exactly. I know. This was their get right game, right? Yes, I don't have the kind of history with the series, or the maybe even the affinity for this game like Casey does for Diablo, but the game I'm thinking of here is Knights of the Old Republic KOTOR. The first game specifically, I haven't really played the second one. So I booted up a game yesterday. I've got it on Steam. I was playing a little bit, maybe an hour or two of it yesterday, and I think it's aged a little bit better than the CRPGs we were talking about in the first segment. To me, it could be the best Star Wars game we've ever seen, and I don't know if that's, you know, a hot take or something like that, but it's a game that's made me feel most like I was in the Star Wars universe, and the things that were happening would happen to me if I were in that world. But I keep coming back to this idea that maybe I like the idea of KOTOR a lot more than the game itself. Like, when I was playing yesterday, there are parts of it that feel slow. There are, I think the beginning segments kind of drag on. I wish you got to the traveling to different planets a little bit sooner. I wish the Jedi stuff comes up pretty early, I guess. But yeah, I find that the beginning 5 or 6 hours of that game very, very slow pace, and I wish that was a little bit expedited. But it's certainly an easier game to play than the ones we talked about. You know, there's kind of an introduction tutorial, tells you how to equip things, how to level up your character. You can always, some of the first NPCs you meet, well, I should say NPCs, he actually joins you, in the prologue mission of the game, you can keep asking questions to people, to this one fellow, how do I do this? If you don't know and you want to know. And it's the kind of thing I wish we had seen in Baldur's Gate and Planescape Torment, Icewind Dale, and those games. Another thing I come back to with a game like KOTOR, and maybe just PC games in general, just glitches and things not working properly. And you know, I've got a fairly new PC. I don't know if it's the computer's problem or what I'm doing wrong, but yesterday I had to constantly save and load to get my character to move. Subtitles wouldn't load in, and I'm speaking to like some aliens. Like I'm speaking to one Hutt who's running the tournament scene in the first planet, Taurus, and his text isn't loading. So I'm just hearing the Hutt language, whatever that is. And then I get my dialogue choice. I'm like, well, what am I supposed to say to you? I have no idea what you just said to me. So just some small things that kind of annoy me about this game. But KOTOR's got this Star Wars charm that I just can't get over. Again, it really makes me feel like I'm in that universe. We've got Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order coming out next month. This is that game that's coming out. It's the first kind of major single player game that seems to have a lot of what I like in KOTOR, right? Skill trees, world building, interesting maybe dialogue and story stuff that's happening. Obviously, it's a more third-person action type game, but I wonder if Jedi Fallen Order is going to finally supplant, for me and for many people, KOTOR as kind of that pinnacle of Star Wars games. There are other Star Wars games I like, for sure. You know, the Rogue Squadron games I really enjoy, but they're very different, right? Not these kind of role-playing story games that obviously we focus on the mage. I wanted to talk a little bit about the MMO, The Old Republic, because when that came out, about, I think, 8 to 10 years after KOTOR did, I was really into it for a while. I got the collector's edition with the big statue. I was very invested in the Old Republic MMO that came out in this world. And That game kind of really cemented for me that I don't like MMOs. And I really loved the Star Wars elements of it. I think the story was good. It had some neat characters, a lot of variety to what you could do in terms of your classes and stuff, certainly more than KOTOR had. But yeah, there's almost too much. There's too many side quests. There's too much running around from place to place. At least with KOTOR, the environments are a little bit smaller. There's not as much of that endlessly running from point A to point B. That's, I also was watching, I know, in an MMO, I guess, but in my single player RPGs, I don't like that. And so that is something I appreciate about KOTOR, is that the environments are a little bit more compact, and there's lots of people to talk to, and different ways of solving quests, I think, is fun too. So KOTOR, I'm always gonna have a fondness for, but yeah, I'm in 2019, I'm a little bit mixed about it still, maybe.
Now, I don't know. I mean, the only MMO I've really played is WoW.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, and I'm playing Classic, actually. It's amazing. But is that, did you get to like level cap in that? Or was it something you played, just, you know, dabbled with, and you're like, eh, this isn't really for me?
I think I probably put in about 20 or 30 hours, and that was enough. I don't think I hit level cap. That's
I highly doubt it for the only.
I played maybe like 2/3 or 3/4 of the storyline that I was on, and I was enjoying it. But again, at the end, by the time I gave up, I think I was just feeling like it was too much of a grind. You know, I'm constantly going A to B, do this for me, do this for me. Here's some experience. You're getting closer to, you know, the next level, and it was just taking too long. And I wasn't as satisfied. I guess the story beats were becoming fewer and fewer. Or fewer and far between, right? Like, and this happens in every MMO, that eventually you get to that point where it's just the grind. It's just the point where you're at the level cap or close to it. You're trying to get that end game gear so you can do raids and stuff. And I've never really been into that. I just want more and more story and more decision making. And so I think that's the point when I gave up with the Old Republic. But
yeah, for me, I totally got, like, you know, back in the day with it, the raids, man. Ooh-wee.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing more fun than going in there with, like, you know, I've raided 10 or 25 man people, you know, and then getting in there and doing the thing. That's why it's like, I really want to raid with Classic WoW, like 40 people, I think would be incredible, you know? So
I always, and I love the idea of that, but I don't feel like I'm willing to put in the time to get there.
Dude.
You know, it was the same thing with Destiny. Like Destiny, and Destiny 2, I wanted to do the raid content. But to get to that level to be able to do it. And well, then you have to have the number of players you need to do it. Like, it's just too much. And it sucks that there's this really great, really great end game content, but you have to do all this work to get there. And I wish it was, again, you know, getting back to that idea of accessibility, I wish you could just find a way to make those open to more players.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, honestly, if you were really into raids, like the World of Warcraft, like the retail version, like Battle for Azeroth. That's really like you buy that, you get a boost to 110. So you only have to level to 10 levels, and you could do that in like no time. And then you could like get into raids really quick. Yeah. And they've introduced stuff where it's like, it's called LFR, looking for raid. And it's like, you just click like, yeah, I want to queue up for that. And then you just like get paired, and it might, you know, there might be a 10-minute queue where you just go do other stuff, and then it pops, and it's like, oh, all right, teleport to the dungeon, sweet. You know what I mean? They've made it super easy, and like the way it works is like the LFR version is the easiest, and like gives you like the lowest, like, you know, that the items are not as good as like if you do the other ways, you know. But it still lets you experience, you know, the big massive content. And you know, relatively easy, like they break it up for you nice too, where it's like, oh, it's only one wing of this raid, so yeah, you're not going to be in here for 8 hours, you know, you could get it in and out pretty quick. So
I'm glad to hear that that's the way we're going, maybe that developers are finding ways to give everybody that end game experience that they've obviously put so much time into. Just to kind of wrap up KOTOR, like it's a game for me that I thought for years and years, I thought we were going to get a remake or a remaster or something like that. I was very surprised that that's one of the games they never brought to modern consoles. Again, playable, I believe, on iPad, and there's an iOS and an Android version of KOTOR, which I'm kind of morbidly curious about how those play on touchscreens, but I've kind of chickened out from buying the Android.
David approves.
Imagine playing a CRPG on your phone, right? Isn't that blasphemy?
The dream, dude. The dream.
Dream. Well, it's a mini computer in your hand. But before David blows a gasket, KOTOR. Yeah, it's a game I'm really surprised we didn't get. It wasn't brought forward again. Like, I feel like people obviously really love it. You know, it's one of those games that people talk about as being, you know, very fond memories of that one. I think it sold pretty well. I think it did well critically. My understanding is that this year they even there was even some hints or some discussions about possibly one of the new Star Wars movies that will be made in the future will be kind of set in this world or set in this Old Republic universe. So that'd be kind of a cool thing to see, and maybe a good time to bring the game back as well. It's one of those things that really feels like a Star Wars story. And when you're playing it, you feel like you are creating your own story in that universe. And to me, that's why it's one of my favorite games. Even if I don't love playing it, there's so much that it does. I think I have respect and appreciation for it.
Well, I'll finish up our CRPG discussion with, if you're sitting or listening to the pod wondering, you know, is there anything worth playing, any CRPG there worth playing on a Switch? Like, please tell me. And I'm here to tell you, if you're going to play a CRPG on the Switch, I think my recommendation would be Wasteland 2. This one, I think it was last year that this came out, and I reviewed it for NWR, and again, it's one of those things where it's like it's certainly better on PC, but if the Switch is all you got, or like Casey was saying, if it's one of those things where you love CRPGs and you want to play it on a commute into town or that sort of thing, and that portability is important to you, this has a lot of modern features that it looks like they put work to make like effort in to make it work well on a small screen in handheld mode. Because it was more intuitive to play. Like, they had like you still have that strategic element to it where you put your characters into certain spots because you can use environmental like hiding behind things and shooting certain things to create events and that sort of thing. But then they also have radials and. Which makes it easier when you want to actually select your unit to do something. It also has a good way of like the turn-based system with selecting like moving on from one character to the next so that you can make sure they're that everyone is doing something useful. It feels like that's the sort of thing I want to put my time into. They also have and it has all the things that you would expect from a CRPG that you want. Like, it has tons of customization. It has great exploration, big world to look. It has meaningful choices, like right off the bat. The first thing that happens is that there's two locations that are both in distress, and depending on which one you choose, that affects the rest of the game. So it has good replayability. Yeah, it's just like if I had to recommend this type of game to someone, if this is your jam and you need it on Switch, Wasteland 2 would be my choice. I know there was the recent release. What was the one that just came out? Was it that Adam reviewed for the site?
Oh, Divinity Original Sin 2, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really liked that game too.
Yeah, and again, that's another. I think one of the things that seems to be the commonality between the games that are good is that they put effort into porting, because I know with that one they set it up where the Switch version and the PC version are actually linked, so you can pick up where you left off. Like, you, if let's say you have a bus ride into town for work and you play for a couple hours and you come home and you prefer the PC experience, it'll actually pick, like, the save will transfer over to your PC so you can pick up where you left off and keep on going.
That's nice.
So you can play the more preferred way. Because that's the other thing is, like, for CRPGs, I know, like, we were just talking about Knights of the World Republic. I played that when I was in university, and it's not a game that I would just play like half an hour here and half an hour there. Like, I was probably sitting for like 3 or 4 hours. And the Switch is good for portability, but it's not always great to sit there with the Switch in your hand for 3 to 4 hours. So a lot of times something like this, like, it's nice to be in a comfortable chair at a bigger screen so you can read things and you're not becoming fatigued from like holding a console in your hand and trying to read small text. So that's why I've always kind of been skewed towards these types of games should be played on your PC, or they're preferred, like that's you're going to enjoy them more there. So it's good to see like the companies when they're doing these ports, the ones that are successful are the ones that have that acknowledge that it's not enough just to put the game on the Switch. Like, there has to be quality of life improvements.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise, why would you play it on Switch and not on PC, right? If there's no, obviously you want that portability, but I think people are only willing to sacrifice so much, right? We can sacrifice a little bit of visual fidelity and maybe some performance, but when the controls don't work and when there's bugs and glitches and other things, and the experience is so different compared to the original one, why would you ever play it on console, let alone Switch?
This is the last call for alcohol this evening.
Well, that music is telling us that the bartender is ready to head home, and it's last call. And it wouldn't be a last call unless we had a little bit of a debate on the way out of the pub. And I know last week Jordan had asked me, he made a request a week in advance for the debate. And so this week we are going with, are we excited for a Final Fantasy 16?
Do you remember what prompted me to say that we should talk about this? Like, what were we talking about? And we're like, and then I said, oh yeah, can we please talk about FF16 next week?
Well, I was probably gushing about Final Fantasy 15.
As you do.
Yeah.
I think we were comparing Dragon Quest, the series, to Final Fantasy, series, I believe, right?
Yeah, because last week the discussion was about how Dragon Quest sticks to tradition.
Yes, yes, that's
right. And,
yeah.
And that Final Fantasy was always evolving.
Yep.
And so Final Fantasy VII Remake, we know what the battle system is going to be. It's going to be this hybrid of turn-based system mixed in with some action elements, or you can even turn the action elements off and just go total classical turn-based system. That is a departure from Final Fantasy 15, that went with a very action-oriented system. So the question is, I guess it's a multi-part question, because one is, you know, is Square going to, like, are they prioritizing a Final Fantasy 16? If so, are they going to be going with going back to the you know, original story with some kind of evolution in the gameplay? And if those, both of those are true, are you guys looking forward to seeing what that will become?
I mean, for me, my excitement gauge for Final Fantasy 16 is, like, I'd say almost non-existent. And I don't necessarily mean that in a, like, a, oh, I, you know, I don't want it kind of thing. I just, you know, 15 didn't really, you know, move the needle for me, you know, and it's, I mean, I guess, you know, it's like I've always appreciated Final Fantasy, but I feel like I've always gotten into them late, in the sense that, like, you know, aside from probably 7, you know, like the earlier ones I had interest in afterwards, you know, after they'd been out for a while. So I feel like any time in the more recent years where I was more cognizant of a Final Fantasy game coming out, it hadn't really, you know, sort of piqued my interest at all. So for me, you know, when they announce it, and I'm sure they'll probably be like, hey, here's an announcement about an announcement for when we're going to show off a trailer, you know? So it's like, I'll get excited when we actually get to see the trailer. I'd say I'm cautiously optimistic. I sort of hope they go back to the more, like, you know, we want the dang traditional games here, you know, but not too traditional, like those crappy CRPGs. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like the whole, like, the meme, you know, oh, just four dudes driving around in a car, you know, it's like, give me a good old fantasy setting, you know, a big, something's coming to destroy the world, and, you know, you got, like, this team going out to stop it or whatever. But yeah, like I said, I'll be interested enough to see what it is, but yeah, I can't say, you know, I can't sit here and say I'm, like, overly excited or anything for it.
I don't even know if it's going to happen, because you've got Final Fantasy VII Remake, which is going to be multi-part, and I imagine you have your number one team working on that. So if we know the first part is Midgar, and there's so much more of the game left after that, when could 16 possibly come out? 10 years after 15? Like, seriously, like, when Final Fantasy VII Remake took this long? 16, I don't know. Like, I don't even know if it's going to happen. I don't know what they would do. Maybe they would just go back to remaking, doing the big remakes of games, right? Like, stop at 15, and then, okay, remake 7, that's doing well. Remake 6. Remade 4, I don't know. There's no reason to remake 8, because only one person we know is going to buy it. But I guess you could remake 9. Like, I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to be excited for 16 when I don't know if or when it's even coming. The reason I wanted to talk about it is because I think if it does come out, I have some hope for it more than I did when I found out that FF7 Remake was going to have a turn-based mechanic to the combat. To me, that's like, oh, we kind of screwed up with 15. We need to go back a little bit. We're not going to, you know, go back to Octopath Traveler or something like that, or Dragon Quest. But we need to take a half step back and add some turn-based element here, because that was in the original game, and maybe the long-time Final Fantasy fans still want to see that in the game. So that, to me, that makes me somewhat excited, or maybe less worried about a potential Final Fantasy 16, because they're recognizing that interest in turn-based combat, and maybe a hybrid for 16 is the way they would go. The more I think about 15, the less I like it. I think I enjoyed playing it, but when I think about the world and the combat and just my overall kind of memories of the game, they're not very good. And I think it speaks to the reception of the game and how well it sold and how much people spent on the DLC, that the planned DLC, the second wave of it, they couldn't even finish it, that maybe people... You know, the overall impression is that Final Fantasy 15 isn't that great. David, I know you like the game. I'm not trying to, you know, shit on your opinions or something like that. But I think that Square Enix might even be pivoting away from that a little bit in focusing so much on this 7 remake, making it multi-part, adding the turn-based combat. Like, this is going to be years and years of this game that we're going to be playing, or parts of this game, I suppose. So I don't know, when does Final Fantasy 16 even happen? What does it look like? Maybe it looks just like Final Fantasy 7 remake. I don't know.
Yeah, to me, like, excitement and expectation have to be mutually exclusive in this case, because I don't, like, I'm with you, I don't expect Final Fantasy 16 to come out anytime soon. There was a large gap between 13 and 15. Mm-hmm. I believe it was almost 10 years, and that's probably what we're looking at now. So, unfortunately, that's a long time from now. And I think this Final Fantasy 7 remake is going to be a trilogy. That's just kind of the way I'm thinking now. I guess the controversial statement I'll make today is I kind of wish they didn't bother with Final Fantasy 7 Remake and they just went straight to 16.
How dare you? How dare you? You're monster. Breaking Casey's heart.
That's it. Where's the bottle? I need to smash it.
Yeah. I didn't need the remake. I enjoyed 7 and the story's great, but the 16s, like, the Final Fantasy series is always about what's next. Like, and I guess it's like when I look at where it's gone, like when Final Fantasy X went with X2, it was a fine game, but at the time I'm like, no, I don't need to continue the story of Spira. Like, it's like, give me the next thing. Like, this I didn't play it that much at the time. And then 13, I didn't like 13 the game. My biggest complaint about it was because it was just one long hallway. The combat system I actually didn't mind too much. Like, it was pretty complicated and in some cases, like, convoluted, but I liked the strategy that was needed for that game. But it was the fact that there was no open world until the last 5 minutes, and even then it wasn't there was no point to it, really. That's where my disdain for 13 came in. But like you're saying, I enjoyed 15. It's funny, I lived with the action RPG element of the combat of 15. It was certainly not my favorite, but everything else about I loved that it was a completely open world. I didn't mind the driving around with four dudes. Like, they were having a good time. There was a very kind of, I don't know, bro, guys hanging out, helping each other, sort of thing that I liked. And it's funny, the game actually starts off by saying that Final Fantasy 15 is a game for both first timers and longtime fans alike. And I feel like that is the case, because there's so much homage to previous Final Fantasy titles. But I think at the end of the day, I would have preferred they take the combat system that they've applied to the 7 remake and just had that be what Final Fantasy 16 would be. And it would be an open world, and it would be a brand new story.
Yeah, I don't know. Which Final Fantasy game that's been made do we want 16 to look like? Like, without a bias, you know, like, it's easy to say, like, you know, our favorite game, let's just do 16 like that. But, like,
what? I want it new. Like, that's what I expect from Final Fantasy now, is that there might be elements that it comes from, but it still feels new. And when you look at, like 7 was a very traditional turn-based, and they started changing, like, 8 started to change it a bit. I know 9 and 10 were pretty traditional too, but then, like, 12 was brand, like, a brand new, it was more MMO style, and then 13 was that brand new, and then 15 was brand new. It's like, just keep giving me the new.
Give us another MMO, baby.
Yeah, I don't know, no MMOs. I actually heard... I heard 14 was good. Like, 14 is supposed to be one of the best ones, but I just, like, I don't have the will or the time to put into an MMO. Like, it's, I'll never gonna play. Like, if you're getting into the MMO, that's your game. Like, don't plan on playing anything else. Like, this is it. This is it for you. Like, you have to keep playing this game for however long it is. But yeah, like, yeah, I think I would have preferred a brand new story for 16, and then they just like this, the combat system that they have for remake looks incredible, and I'm excited for it, but I think I would have preferred a new story. Like, I know the story of Final Fantasy 7 already. Like, yeah, they're gonna do some changes, that's fine, but I don't need to go through it again, especially since I just played the port on Switch. Like, I'm ready for something new.
David, as someone who played the game at PAX West, I can tell you you're wrong. you will enjoy this game, and you're gonna want to play it. I think it's shaping up to be really, really good. Not just an absolutely you know, visually gorgeous game, but the action, the movements are actually really fun. I playing the demo changed me from a skeptic to someone who's actively excited about the game. But I'll leave us maybe with one quick question. Do you think it's possible that Final Fantasy 16 could be a 2D game? Do you think that's at all possible?
Not for Final Fantasy.
I could see.
No, I think that's what Octopath is.
Yeah, I was going to say, I could even see a Final Fantasy game in a 2D and having the Final Fantasy name, but I don't think it would be 16, you know? It would be some sort of, maybe an unnumbered, you know, or you know, yeah, I don't think they would, you know, like David said, 16, or not 16, the main lines have sort of become, they're bigger, better, crazy, you know what I mean? Like, more ambitious, you know? So yeah. I think if they reeled it back to a 2D, even if it was super ambitious in other aspects of the game, I think people would see that as a bad thing, you know?
Yeah, 16, like, the main lines have always been pushing what can happen on that console. Like, how can we push the console to the point where it's bending but not breaking? And you can't do that in the 2D space. And I think they have enough IPs outside of the Final Fantasy that they could do, like, Octopath Traveler, I think, is the 2D now. Or even with Dragon Quest, like, they have too many IPs that are 2D that they don't need to go back to that one. If anything, I think maybe if they brought back the tactics and kind of went with even, but then even then it's kind of isometric. So
what if Final Fantasy 16 was just Final Fantasy Tactics?
So I mean, I've sort of worn thin. I'd on play the it, but tactics
I don't
games,
expect
but...
it.
David, I'm going to keep pitching ideas till you're like, okay, yeah, I want that.
Fine.
No. No, mainline Final Fantasy 16 is pushing the my console to smoke out the back. It's got to be trend setting, and it's got to push the boundaries. It's got to keep people up at night that are working on it until the 10 years have passed. That's
David
what I expect.
David wants them
from a
grinding for 15 years straight on the crunch.
They don't need to sleep. Make my game.
Yeah, I don't know. Final Fantasy 16 is not coming out.
Final Fantasy 16, mobile exclusive.
Yeah. That's the David Lloyd special.
Yeah. All right, well, it's a good time to cut her short here then. Starting to get into the mobile.
Yeah. On that note.
And the fact that we keep going over our expected hour of podcast.
Yeah. Well, what I'll say is if there's anyone who would like to, you can send us an email at david@thethirstymage.com, or if you want to send a tweet to us at @thethirstymage, or we have a Discord now as well. So if you're looking to hook up with a bunch of RPG junkies, we have a Discord server. You can just search The Thirsty Mage, or I've pinned it on our Twitter account as well if you're looking for the link.
Yep, you could find David in the Boulder's Gate tab in Discord. Yeah, that's right. And pretty much any time throughout the day.
He's just typing random nonsense, so if you don't understand what's going on there, that's kind of the feel. If you don't understand what's going on there, it's kind of the same feeling as playing the game in 2019.
So you just save a couple dollars.
Yep. That's right.
Yeah, so if you'd like to... even right now, we have some future episodes that we have planned, and we're actually playing the games now, so we have some rooms for those. So if you'd like to play the game before we start talking about it on the pod, that's a great place to meet and play together, and so feel free to come out there. And also, you can let us know if there's if you have a topic or a question or a debate that we can do for Last Call, feel free to recommend it, and it may be... the feature at the end of one of our episodes.
Just to specify, so the channels we've got open right now and the games that we're kind of playing for upcoming episodes, Witcher 3 just came to Switch, so a couple of us are playing it on PS4. I think John's going to be joining us. He's playing it on Switch. You and John haven't been able to put the game down, so I'm really looking forward to that. And then Final Fantasy 1 is an upcoming episode as well. David, you're playing the original NES version. I'm playing the Dawn of Souls version. Actually, I'm just at the Tiamat boss fight now.
Who's playing the mobile version?
I love that. Damn, I love that game. No, Casey, get the hell out of here.
Should I download it?
You got to Tiamat already?
Yeah, it's super fast, that version.
I just got out of the Marsh Cave.
Well, I know. we'll talk about it more soon. It's a super expedited version. There's just a lot of quality of life changes that make it a lot faster. But we'll get there in a couple weeks, and that'll be an exciting episode. But yeah, you know, hop in our Discord, so we're happy to talk about those games before the episodes come up, and even afterwards too.
Yeah, and if you'd like to track any of us down, we're all at NintendoWorldReport.com. Casey has his own podcast, the Talk Nintendo Podcast. And if you want to see our reviews on the CRPGs that we talked about at the beginning, they're all on the NintendoWorldReport.com. Otherwise, unless anybody has any final thoughts, I think that's going to do it for another episode.
Just throw out some Twitter handles here, just in case people aren't following us yet. @riskman64 is mine. You know, follow me. Happy to chat with you guys about RPGs and other games. I'm always posting links to my reviews and videos and stuff there too. So please check that out. I'm in the middle of my own personal Ring Fit adventure, so I've got kind of a video series going on there.
He's getting in shape.
Damn, that game is bloody exhausting, man. I'm getting in shape, but then I'm passing out right afterwards. So I don't know if it's. I don't know if that's helped me out, but yeah, that's a fun one. So I'm trying to post a new video on that series every Monday, so you can check that out on NWR TV on YouTube.
Sweet. Yeah, you can find I'm on Case_Jets on Twitter, or Talk Nintendo Pod, either one of those. You can get me you know, talking about the sadness that is the New York Jets. And video games.
Yeah, and I'll finish it up with I'm @FilteredGamer or the the Thirsty Mage. So feel free to look us up and join us for a game. So until then, we're sticking to the weekly format, which is working well, and we hope to continue to do that. And make sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any. And if you have a few minutes, to make sure to leave us a review to help the visibility of the podcast. And but until then, we'll see you next week.
Adios.
See you later.
Bye.